You're listening to the COVID-19 series of Bridge the Gap podcast. This series is designed to provide resources, share the love stories, and encourage those who are working tirelessly to oversee the care of aging adults. We believe in you.
Hey, welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas on our special series on COVID-19. We've got Charles Turner. He is the CEO of CARE on the program today with an amazing hat on his head. And we're going to be talking about caregivers and some questions that are being asked right now to help elevate education and thought leadership on a platform where so many people are needing to have this conversation. Charles, thanks so much for coming back on our show.
Always a pleasure to see you guys.
Great to have you, man.
Our show looks a little bit different. We're all in the process of living through this coronavirus situation, and one of the biggest conversation is around workforce labor, and especially nurses and frontline caregivers. So it was a natural thing for us to bring you back on the show. Talk to us about what you're hearing.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting. So, you know, because of what we do, you know, we're in the front lines of, you know, those frontline caregivers replacing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of caregivers, thousands of caregivers into kind of open and filled shifts. And I would say, you know, based on what we do, a lot of operators are looking for labor contingency plans. I think there is a lot of chatter, a lot of talk you see it in the news about, you know, how can we as an industry acquire PPE, you know, personal protective equipment, which is all very, very good because that's a very acute problem. But one of the things that I don't think we're talking about enough is, okay, what happens if, you know, facilities start getting shut down or they get quarantined or, you know, our labor force, because, you know, their kids don't have, you know, daycare or school, they've got to take care of them. What happens to our labor force? How do we supply labor force where it's already going to be suppressed based on just simple logistics? And then we have, that's compounding with, you know, facilities, communities that are going to need labor and then, you know, and they're quarantined. So I think over the next week or two, you know, I hate the crystal ball question, but we may start pivoting between going from how do we acquire PPE to how do we make sure we have enough people that are healthy, protected, working in our work environment. And so you're starting to hear a little bit of rumblings on that. We're talking to our heroes. Everybody who works on our platform is called a hero. We're talking about quite a bit. We don't see a ton of concern yet, but there's a little bit of kind of like wait and see and what actually happens in the next few weeks. So I think, you know, just it's a little bit of tread lightly right now.
So that's really interesting. And Charles, you guys, with the platform that is really growing that you guys have formed, you recently did some surveys and things like that. And tell us a little bit about who you surveyed, what that looked like, and maybe talk us through some of your findings.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we initially sent out a survey to, I think, about 600 people. We got about 150 respondents. Again, these are mostly, I'd say 80, 90% of kind of your frontline caregivers. You know, mostly your CNAs, care aides, you know, med techs, some LVN, LPN type, some RNs. But I would say 80, 90% are on that frontline caregiver category. And we did it for our purposes, kind of forecast our business to say, you know, kind of just the question you asked. What is going to happen how are the front lines feeling about this? I know we always hear from the executives and, you know, what they're doing to plan for this, but have we actually asked those frontline caregivers, what do they think about this? Are they afraid? And we sent four simple questions. And the very first question, just asking frontline caregivers, you know, how concerned are you about catching the coronavirus? And the interesting thing about it is, you know, the anywhere from like, you know, I'm really scared to I'm not really worried at all. And then, you know, based on four different options, what was really, I guess, refreshing and helpful for us was, you know, I guess you'd call this 72.5% of them said they're either somewhat concerned, but they're taking proper precautions. And then, you know, or a good portion of them said they're not really worried at all. Only a small handful of them said that they're really, really scared. So that first question made me feel a little better. So then we started asking them, okay, You know, what about, you know, the facilities and the communities that you work in? How do you feel about those communities? And the good news is, I think they also felt that most companies, not all, were generally well prepared. I think the vast majority of them either said that, you know, they're very well prepared. They're doing the best that they can, though they don't think it's going to do much good. But the majority, 57%+ said they're prepared and their residents will be well cared for. So I thought that was pretty refreshing. Now, when you start getting into a little bit more, you know, get a little more granular on this, there you go. So asking the question, you know, how do they feel about their own safety? We asked them the question, you know, with the threat of coronavirus, you know, how concerned are you for your own safety? And will that affect your ability to work? 55% of them said they are concerned, but they're really not going to change their work habits. And 35% of them actually said this is going to motivate them to pick up more shifts. I thought that was fantastic because you have a workforce that feels like they're still mission. We always say this, our workforce, no matter, it's a tough job, but they're still very missional. And a lot of them are driven because of the coronavirus to help out our caring communities and work more. So that was great. Only 10% of them said that they may end up working less because of a threat of their own health. Now, the last question, which I thought was interesting, I think you can take this a couple of ways, is, you know, okay, let's take a look at logistics. Let's look at schools closing, daycare closing, you know, churches closing, any institution closing. Regardless, you may want to pick up shifts or you may want to work, but will you have the ability because you got to take care of a child, take care of a loved one? The good news is 70% of them said, you know what, it's not going to affect me one bit at all. But 27.5% of them said, you know, yeah, it's going to affect my ability to pick up work somewhat. Now, how do we quantify somewhat? We don't know. But think about, you know, if you have, you know, 100 employees in your organization and a quarter of them are going to be affected somewhat. So that means at least what, somewhere between 10 and 20% of your workforce is going to be affected. You know, that's just frankly wildly speculating, but that could affect your ability to bring in a, you know, to have enough staff to work, you know, for your facility. Now, this is assuming it's a normal community, you know, everything's going fine. Now, what happens if you actually have a case of coronavirus or you're in lockdown in one of your cities? Does this get magnified? This is the piece that worries me, that I think in a couple of weeks, as we get more and more in, you know, lockdown, if we get more and more in lockdown, it's going to affect the supply of our workforce. And they're going to, it's just going to inhibit them and maybe prevent them from picking up more and more shifts.
This is really interesting stuff, Charles. Thanks for sharing that. A few things that I just kind of jotted down questions as you were going through there. And that first question, do you think it seems like a lot of the young people, younger workers seem to not be as frightened, obviously, as the older workforce? What do you think kind of these that were polled, the heroes that were polled? What do you think kind of the average age is on this work group?
I, you know, because it was a blind survey and it was an anonymous survey, we don't know. However, if you look at, and I really wish I had these statistics, I guess I could come up with these statistics. If I had to guess, I would say our average pool probably tends somewhere in the late 30s, early 40s is my guess. And so those are the ones that it seems like, you know, they're already working, you know, they're already working a lot anyway. I don't think they have a ton of, you know, maybe kid issues to deal with. They may be a little bit the same with generation a little bit, or starting to get into that. But I think, you know, I don't see, we see a lot of the younger folks on our platform. They're still picking up shifts. They're still working, you know, as hard as anybody else is right now.
Yeah. a couple of great other things I noticed, like you, I've been amazed at the stories that are coming out and being shared, and even some of our guests that we're talking with that are sharing their labor situations, that the number of call outs has actually gone down. And I think in some of your questions here, the level of commitment that was shown to come to work, that's, I think, is something that we should be spotlighting about our industry that is not told enough outside of our industry, that people don't really know the inner workings at how committed of a workforce we have, the people that come to work, even in conditions like we are facing today. Right. And then the third thing, I'm wondering, it seems like some of the, I guess, less positive answers, which were obviously in the minority, but the people that maybe they're thinking, hey, we may be less likely to come to work because of a certain condition, or we may be compromised in coming to work if more daycares close or things like that. One of the things that we've heard over and over again as executives are planning is that many are trying to put plans in place for things like, hey, if you need to bring your child to work, or if we need to assist with that so you can be at work. And there's a lot of efforts to almost over communicate those plans. Yep. Do you feel like that's an opportunity as you're getting feedback from your heroes that these different workplaces could be doing more of certain types of communication?
I think, Josh, I don't think you can stress that point enough, because we are in so many different buildings. We see the good, the bad, and the ugly. Everybody by now, I think, has some form of infection control policy. Some are better than others. Some are more complete than others. Some are like literally cartoons. Here's how you wash your hands. And some are 700 pages long. And this is how, like, you put the certain gown on, the glove on. I don't think I can stress enough the level of communication all from the CEO all the way down to, call it your director of nursing, over and over and over and over and over again. Case in point, there is a facility, actually a company, not going to name names, where, they have the proper, I guess you'd call it the proper infection control policies, but there's not a lot of communication. They're not being enforced. People are coming in and out at will. And, our workforce, they go into enough buildings to know who's doing a good job and who's doing a bad job. And the word has gotten out. I mean, I probably the last 72 hours, like, don't go work at this building or don't go work at this company because they don't enforce their infection. They don't communicate. We don't know what's going on. And then rumors start to spread like, we think they have a COVID case when they don't. But, and then literally nobody wants to come to work at that place, whether it's their own employees or our employees or anybody else's. And so that company needs, if I had any recommendations, get ahead of it. Communicate not only the CEO. I've seen some really, really good CEO messages. By the way, if you get a chance, go on LinkedIn, look at what Phil Fogg did at the Marquee, at his address. I thought it was fantastic. But I think how the executive directors, the DONs are communicating, what is your, multiple times a day, here's what's going on in our community, to the families, to the staff that's not there. You may have a lot of staff that's not there. They don't know what's going on, but they may be coming in the next day. It's kind of like we lived through Hurricane Harvey. And that was a crazy time, 2-3 weeks for us, where we were communicating with staff, families from an executive level all the way down at least twice a day. And there's a call on lines with everything going on to just relieve panic. And for the way I look at this, this is like a hurricane or post hurricane that it could last for months and months and months. So, I mean, communication, I think, is just absolutely key. And I've seen where it's failed pretty badly in some cases.
Charles, we've talked a lot there, even at the NIC spring conferences, there's this collaboration between healthcare and senior living that comes up more and more and more. And this idea that I'm seeing just about the issues with PPE, assisted living is not a hospital. And so for them to have stockpiled a lot of PPE, I imagine would not be a normal or a typical rational thing. What How do you think that's going to change in the future, given this massive pandemic of COVID for future years?
Well, I think it's twofold problems, right? It's how do we acquire it? What's our strategy toward PPE? One, how do we use it is the other. I do know there's a lot of industry initiatives, and I say industry meaning the trade associations are trying to work together to come en masse. They're also working with the states, but in the states, they're also competing with the federal government. And so you're starting to see this, like everyone's competing with each other. And it's kind of like, in any disaster, in any kind of thing you call a third world country, where every NGO rushes in there to help and they all want to do a really good job, but then they start competing with each other and no one's coordinating everything. I think over time, somebody in our industry is going to have to take, whether it's Nick, Aka Incal, Argentum, Osho, somebody's going to have to take the lead and really say, we're going to be in charge of, call it disaster recovery or, disaster planning or whatever, and we're going to coordinate. We're going to be the quarterback for all this stuff. That's going to have to come out of it. I think in some ways it's only going to accelerate our alignment with, we always talk about, okay, what's happening with Medicare Advantage and what's happening with, post-acute and acute alignment. I think that's strategically, it's only going to make us make more sense. So I think over time, we'll see more alignment, the PPE acquisition side and coordination side. One of the things that I'm not seeing, I don't mean to be negative about this, is, I had the unfortunate luxury several years ago to spend, 2 years, not me personally, but a loved one, 2 years in MD Anderson Cancer Center in the leukemia area, where, folks in the leukemia area have, after treatment, they have no immunity. And so if you look at the infection control processes of sort of a major hospital, especially something like that, how they not only monitor who comes in that space, who comes in the building, but they monitor how someone moves from room to room to room. We're having a lot of chatter around PPE about, we need to acquire PPE and we need to make sure that no one else comes in our building except for healthcare workers. But we're not really talking about, as an industry that I've seen, if someone has it, please share it because I'm looking for it. What are those infection control processes as someone goes from room to room? There's a very strict process of how you do this stuff. And all we're doing right now is talking about only healthcare workers can come in. Well, the thing that concerns me is I think the biggest risks of bringing people into a building are healthcare workers, right? Because a lot of them are going building to building, company to company, and they may not know their carrier for a week or so, and they're just spreading it from place to place. What happens once they're in that building? I think there needs to be a lot more effort on, when someone's in the building, how do we manage infection control? Yeah, we can isolate, but we still need to treat, or still need to care. How do we do that and not spread it from room to room to room? I've not seen a lot of chatter. I'm always looking at the newsletters and the policies that come out every day. I haven't seen a ton on that. And I hope over the next few days, we see more chatter on that.
Man, this is so interesting. We could have a lot of long conversations on all this stuff that we've hit on. And I think there's also a lot of implication as we talk about communication and even tracking room to room. I would imagine, Charles, you've been big in the, I would consider, healthcare tech space as well. And yeah. I'm just wondering, how that all fits into this, as senior living traditionally has kind of been one foot in to like digital and health tech and one foot in, old school paper and binders, and how, post COVID, how that looks. I feel like this is forcing a lot of businesses to implement a lot of digital strategies and remote access strategies that we haven't ever been forced to deal with.
I think you're right. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's going to change the nature of, what does a regional director do and what does a regional nurse do and how do you measure the effectiveness of your business? I'm actually hoping soon or gone are the days of, hey, how's it going there? And how your residents, how your leads, click, this actually may force a lot of positive change. We'll see, but it could. I think the digital strategy coming out of this and what people are forced to do and learn could be could be very positive for us long term.
Yeah, I agree. I think our industry is going to rally. I think we're, you know, while we hear some negative stories like you will hear anywhere, I think the majority of what we're hearing is pretty positive. And as you say, and I think have appropriately named your team heroes. Yeah. We believe in the heroes and the healthcare heroes, so thankful for the time that you've taken away from your team today. I know you're worked overtime right now, and it's always a great pleasure to talk with you and have you on our show.
You know, I'll always love what you guys are doing. So, you know, appreciate the time you guys put into this. I know you have your day job, so I know this takes up a ton of time for you guys. So thank you. And of course, Sarah, thank you for putting this all together, because we know how this really works. So thanks for everything you guys are doing.
You got it, Charles. Well, and to our listeners that enjoy these conversations, you will be seeing more of Charles in the future, back for more specific topics related to labor, workforce, and technology. But for right now, we'll connect in the show notes. And to our listeners, thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap. I know that you've got questions. Please engage with us on our social channels. Shoot us a DM or go to www.btgvoice.com. Shoot us a message. We'll make sure we get back to you. Have a great day, and thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.